8 millionths of a second faster than it was 50 years ago. This moment of science comes from Indiana University with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom with help from Michael Hamburger in Geological Sciences. I'm Don Glass.
In sports, Ken Maka has been hired as manager of the Milwaukee Brewers, taking over from Dale Sveavum following the team's first postseason appearance since 1982. The 58-year-old Maka, who managed Oakland to a pair of AL West titles, agreed to a 2-year contract. A knee injury suffered in yesterday's practice could mark the end of the season for Indianapolis Colts starting cornerback Marlon Jackson. Coach Tony Dungy did not provide many details about the injury because Jackson is getting a second opinion, but the coach does say the initial test showed Jackson had significant damage to the knee. Chicago Bears coach Lovie Smith says linebacker Hunter Hillenmeyer practiced yesterday with a cast on his right hand. Hillenmeyer had surgery on his broken thumb during the Bears' bye week. Smith says they're still trying to determine the player's availability for Sunday. South Florida is the first member of the AP's top 25 football poll scheduled to see action this week. The 24th-ranked Bulls are 6-2 entering tonight's game at Cincinnati. The Bearcats are 5-3. And the St. Louis Blues are 5-3-0 going into tonight's matchup with the Carolina Hurricanes. In last season's only meeting, the St. Louis Blues skated away with a 1-0 win. That's sports.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 2:43. My guest in this portion of the program is Barbara Fees. She joins me to talk about finding and making opportunities to build the health of our children. It is the topic of a talk she'll give this evening. She is presenting the Fall 2008 Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Lecture, Eat, Sleep, Breathe, Discovering Everyday Opportunities to Build Children's Health. She will present this talk this evening at 7 at the Spurlock Museum on the campus of the University of Illinois. Barbara Fees is the Pampered Chef Endowed Chair in Family Resiliency and Professor and Director of the Family Resiliency Center at Illinois. Professor Fees, thank you so much for joining me today.
Certainly. Thank you for the invitation.
Sure. Eat, sleep, breathe. One of the things that title says to me is, slow down, think about what's important, tend one another. That is so opposed to our often hurried lives. What's the overall theme you want to leave people with this evening?
Well, I think you kind of captured it right there. Let's start with the basics. Let's start with taking out time during the day to eat with your family, make sure that you get a good night's sleep, and take time to pause. And, you know, although those might be things that maybe your mother, your grandmother, your father, your grandfather, your aunts, your uncles might have told you, what I plan to talk about tonight is some evidence that shows that there are some clear biological correlates of what happens when you don't practice these regular routines and the consequences for children's health.
Mm. Now, an opportunity for doing these things presents itself at mealtime.
Right. One of the, you know, I think one of the simple basic things during mealtimes, if families can carve out the 18 to 20 minutes that an average meal lasts, is that what we find is that meals that are practiced, you know, about four times a week, so we're talking less than three television shows that children typically watch, that there's some real positive benefits for children's health. The first one is that, it reduces the risk for childhood obesity. The other is that it opens up opportunities for positive communication in families. And this provides opportunities for people to learn more about what's happening in your daily lives. It provides an opportunity to also find out what's going on in the neighborhood. You know, what happened, you know, with that fight on the bus. You know, maybe that was going on yesterday. But it's a good catch-up time. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be a lengthy affair. But it's a good time just to check in.
Yeah, 18 to 20 minutes. That's not an awful lot of time.
It's not a lot of time, and I think it's a fact that people are a little bit surprised about. But this is what we have found in our studies. This is what has been reported in large epidemiological studies, you know, involving thousands and thousands of people. And it just seems to hold true that that's about what an average family mealtime lasts.
Mm. What's the mechanism for reducing risk of obesity? Why, given a shared meal, would that help us prevent obesity?
Well, we don't know what the exact causal links are, but some of the hypotheses that people are working with right now is that when you eat together as a group and you're communicating, again, you tend to slow down a little bit. So you may not consume as much food. The other thing is if you turn the television off, that also reduces sort of the pace of eating, and you also tend to eat more healthy foods. So we know that when you're eating at home with your family, you're more likely to eat fruits and vegetables. Then you're catching something quickly on the run.
Mm. How do you deal with the messages about food products that kids are bombarded with?
Kids are bombarded, and I think you just got the right word right there. One of the things is that I think parents need to be very well aware of what these messages are sending to kids, particularly for kids under the age of 8. Who really aren't able to process or understand what some of these messages are sending to them because they can't really dissociate the message about the food and the product in terms of sometimes the characters that are associated with them, if they're cartoon characters. They just want the product that's associated with the cartoon character, not necessarily the food, which oftentimes sets up a dynamic between the parent and the child of where the parent feels that they have to sort of give in. And then the parent sort of loses control in terms of being a gatekeeper for food within the house and outside the house. So one of the pieces of advice that I give is that, you know, to be able to, first of all, turn off the television during meals. Second of all, to find ways to have conversations, you know, with children that these are, it's time to reclaim the family table and have children understand, you know, that these are people trying to persuade you about perhaps some products that are not going to be as healthy for you and whether they belong on the family table or not.
Yeah, that device, the television,
mm-hmm.
It is part of our lives, and
yes.
Some people are willing to say it's out of the house, but mm-hmm. that's pretty drastic.
Right.
So how might we make better decisions on when and where we watch and how much time we spend?
Exactly. Well, let's put it in a little bit of perspective in terms of what is the default choice. The average amount of time that children spend in front of some screen right now is 5.5 hours a day. So if we then put it in the perspective of a family mealtime lasts between 18 and 20 minutes a day, if you make the priority to have a family meal, which is about 20 minutes, you're missing less than one 30-minute television show. So if you set the priority to reduce screen time by 30 minutes a day. It is not actually depriving your child, of either educational opportunities or other screen time. You're increasing opportunities, you know, for communication and being able to spend time with your child.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's making the default choice towards communicating, spending time, getting to know what's going on, which can actually reduce stress in your household rather than increasing stress.
Mm. Sitting around the table with one another, of course, as you've alluded to, is an opportunity for conversation,
mm-hmm.
for keeping up with one another.
Right.
It's also got to play a role in language development.
Yes. There is some very good evidence of this, not some work that we've done in our lab, but in some work that I've reviewed, that it actually increases the vocabulary development, particularly of preschool-age children. So families that, you know, sit around the table, they tend to, you know, use language in ways that promotes a richer language environment for children. So, you know, you might use a word that you're not even thinking of, like stegosaurus, you know, and who would think that this would be something that would be part of a mealtime conversation, but you're actually enriching your child's vocabulary development this way. It's also a good way to think about processing emotions, you know, in a way that's not going to sort of single out one child who might be having a difficult time with something. So you can sort of process it in small bits and pieces over several days, and it gives the child sort of license to sort of think about it and not feel that maybe they're the only one who is experiencing those feelings.
Yeah, you can draw them out with some questions like, what about that fight on the bus?
Exactly. What about that fight on the bus? What happened, you know, maybe to somebody down the street? Were you able to talk to your teacher about, you know, that paper or that problem that you were having in a homework that we were working on last night? So it's a good time just to sort of follow up, and then the child doesn't really feel like they're being grilled, you know, about what, you know, what happened either the day before or the week before.
And you could also ask about their friends. How did they feel about that particular outing or the fight?
Right. And it's oftentimes a time when you can use it for family stories, and you can say, oh, I remember when I was a kid, you know, this happened to me. And children are frequently fascinated with the kinds of experiences that their parents had, you know, growing up, and it gives them sort of a glimpse of, you know, maybe either the goofy things that their kids, you know, their parents did as kids, and it also makes them a little bit more human, too.
Yeah. I remember a great story about my grandmother that my mother told me, and I had no idea about this, but she said that my grandmother, who was a real stickler, she said, well, you know, your grandmother used to open the bedroom window and climb down the tree to go to a dance. It's like, no way.
Right, right, right.
So then the next time you see grandma, you got something to,
right,
you know, talk with her about. That's, yeah. Take her by surprise.
Uh-huh. So it gives you, it does. It gives you a good way to connect across generations or for family members that may not be there all the time. So it's easier, you know, maybe if you're preparing to go to a family reunion or something, it may be a good way to introduce cousins that you've never met before, and a child's feeling sort of, you know, wary about going to a new event. So, you know, it's these little brief moments, you know, that you're able to sort of introduce these new ideas. And if you're regularly practicing this already, then it's not like you have to call a special meeting. you're like, oh, gosh, now we got to get ready. You know, but if you're already having this as a regular routine, you know, four times a week, then it's easy to sort of just fold these conversations in.
Yeah. And you don't need to do then, you know, you're not faced with a total makeover. You're just,
right,
you know, working from the edges toward the center.
Right.
Sleep is another word here in the title.
Right.
What are you learning about families and sleep in your work?
Well, this is something that we, in essence, sort of stumbled upon. A lot of my work has dealt with children who have persistent asthma, and we found that one of their symptoms is waking up in the middle of the night. And what we found is that there are different indicators in sort of the family climate that predict the likelihood that they'll wake up in the middle of the night. So, you know, if there is a fair amount of family stress in the household or if bedtime routines are disrupted, it increases the likelihood that kids will wake up in the middle of the night. And what we found is that these indicators, these family climate indicators, are just as strong as biological indicators, such as reactions to, you know, cockroaches and cats and other sorts of environmental allergens. So the relative predictability and stability of the family climate can provide sort of this calming or soothing effect for kids to sort of get that phase in, you know, to go to sleep. And researchers are finding that sleep is so important in terms of its restorative functions, both in terms of brain growth, in terms of health outcomes, and for children and adults alike. So if one person in the household is not getting a good night's sleep, it's very likely that other members of the household are also not getting a good night's sleep.
We have to wrap it up here pretty quickly now. So one last thought here on breathe, getting folks out of doors.
Yeah, getting folks out of doors, regular exercise, and that the community at large supports safe environments so that people can get out and regularly take advantage of the opportunity for regular exercise. Mm.
Barbara, thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Barbara Fees is the Pampered Chef Endowed Chair in Family Resiliency and Professor and Director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois. Tonight, she will give a talk at the Spurlock Museum, the Knight Auditorium, 7 p.m., Eat, Sleep, Breathe, Discovering Everyday Opportunities to Build Children's Health.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from St. John's Catholic Newman Center. Since 1927, the Newman Center has served the spiritual needs and development of students, faculty, and staff through a program of prayer, study, and service. Learn more on the web at sjcnc.org. Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designer of the Busey Bank Main Branch renovation, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
Earth and sky.
So you have this beautiful bisymmetric symmetry, like a seesaw, or like a butterfly wing. That's the type of symmetry that the galaxy should have.
That's astronomer Thomas Dame talking about our galaxy, the Milky Way. Dame and colleagues at the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astronomy